listening to the Autism 411 podcast with Dr. Tamara Moody from the South Florida Autism Charter School.
Welcome to another edition of the Autism 411 podcast with your host, Dr. Tamara Moody. And we're from the South Florida Autism Charter School, live actually in Dr. Moody's office. So if you hear any of the sounds in the background, you kind of get an idea of what it's like here at the school. And I'm John Roker, your host alongside her, and glad to have you with us here today. So Dr. Moody, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And I understand we got another great training lined up for today.
Yes, we do. And John, I love doing these podcasts. For folks who are listening out there, just a friendly reminder, if there's a topic that you'd love for me to speak about and I haven't already done so, please reach out to us at www.info@sfax.org.
info@sfax.org.
Feel free to reach out to us and I'll be very happy to bring in a professional who may be able to speak more on that subject, or if it's something that I'm knowledgeable about, I'd love to share it with you. Yes, today we're going to be talking about facts about reinforcement. You know, why do we use reinforcement? What's the purpose of using positive reinforcement in the classroom and also at home?
I think a lot of folks think, well, reinforcement, that is something that really just only applies to the autism world. But the reality of it is that's not the case. Reinforcement works all over the board.
Reinforcement works all over the board. People do things every day in anticipation of the outcomes of the benefit that they'll receive. Like, I work because I'm going to get a paycheck. Well, I mean, to be honest, I don't only work because I'm going to get a paycheck. My reinforcer at the end of the day is that feeling that I get from seeing a student who has never spoken a word say hi for the first time or bye for the first time or all done, which is usually what I get when I go and visit a classroom. All done, Dr. Moody. Or just like the push away. It's them getting what they want at the end of the day. And we all want to be able to get something back by an action that we do. And that's basically what reinforcement is. Again, this is all live. I'm in my office and someone is trying to get into the school. I apologize for that disruption. That's the beauty about doing this live and in person in the school. It's a school day.
Yeah. One of the things that you had mentioned when we first started this was that we didn't want the podcast to sound so, you know, professionally put together where it sounds like you're in a room, you're just talking to, folks are listening to whatever you want to say, but you wanted them to get the feel that this is the school, this is what you guys are doing, and that you're not just taking time out to do this podcast to talk to people, you're doing it in the middle of everything that's going on so that folks get an idea of how it can help them, how it can make them better, how it can help a family turn the tables. And you know, with reinforcements, there's so many levels of reinforcement. I mean, where do you even start?
Well, you know, the first thing I always say, when a person first find out that their child get diagnosed, one of the first thing I always say that you should do is find out what your child like. Because at the end of the day, they're not going to just work. They're not going to go to the potty just because you feel like they need to be out of diaper. They're not going to sit still because you feel like you need to cook and they need to sit down. Children do, every person in this world does something for a reason. A man who works hard on the weekend expects to get paid at the end of the week, right? A child who babysits, an older sibling in the household who babysits their siblings as much as you want, you're your bigger brother, you need to do it. No, what is the payoff? What are they going to get? Well, our kids feel the same way. Autism doesn't stop them from wanting something in return for doing something that you desire for them to do. So I always say the first thing to do is to figure out what are the strongest reinforcer that a child wants. And from there, you can work really hard and get them to accomplish so much that they wouldn't typically do without having that reinforcer. So for students with autism, the purpose of using positive reinforcement in the classroom and in the home setting is to assist them to be able to do new skills and maintain these skills over time. Students receive reinforcement contingent on the consequence of their specific behaviors. So for our student, I always like to have at least 10 reinforcers that our kids like, right? So for children with autism, that typically is something tangible like a toy. iPad is a big, the parent phone is like a big source of reinforcer, right?
iPads are like number one over
That's
there.
That's number one. I always say it's like the cheaper version of a babysitter.
Yep.
You know, you pay for it one time and they babysit for you for the entire, from weeks or for hours, up on top of hours. But reinforcers are also very tricky. You also have to be very careful at how reinforcers are being used. So, for example, a child knows that her mother will bring her favorite cookie or her favorite chips after she cleans her room, right? So the behavior is reinforced. The child is more likely that she will clean her room. In our kids, if they know that if they, you know, take a shower, they're going to get their iPad afterwards, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to take that shower. But if the iPad is always given to them whenever they want it, like 12 hours per day, that iPad is going to lose its value. So that's why it's so important with children with autism that you understand like how you should be using that. And when it comes on to positive reinforcement is anything that happens to a behavior that increases the likelihood that that behavior will happen again.
You know, when you mentioned the positive is really important on this, because there is a negative side to reinforcements. And as you mentioned with the iPad, if you know, if it's given to the person or to the child for too long, then it starts to lose its ability to be a helpful tool. But at the same time, it can also become a detriment.
Yes.
So you've got to really watch the fine lines of when this. Families all across the country are learning that. Even I, as a family, learned it over the weekend that, you know, my son's had too much iPad time and we noticed negative reactions. Mm-hmm. So you have to cut the cord a little bit. So it's really a delicate line as to see how much you let them use the reinforcer and when it's used. It kind of needs to be placed properly.
And that's why I'm a firm believer in trying to use natural reinforcer. Yes, the iPad is great. And I feel like those are like golden reinforcers. You keep those for like behaviors that you really desperately need to replace with something more appropriate. I like natural reinforcer that you have. Tickles. So
yes,
easy
tickles.
To give a tickle, right? A high five, a smile, you know, a hug, a kiss. Those are all natural reinforcers that you can control. And even some edible reinforcers like candy that will dissolve after, you know, M&M that will dissolve over a couple of seconds. Reinforcers like that, to me, it's like easier to control than an iPad or a computer or a phone. And I understand why parents tend to use those reinforcers because they're so much stronger. But think about if your child is not potty trained. Gosh, you should be using that for potty training. If your child is now all of a sudden doing SIB, self-interest behavior, or PICA, those are the reinforcers you need to keep for those critical moments. Natural reinforcers should be used for more, you know, everyday use, I believe. And in the classroom, it's just so much easier to use those, a piece of Cheetos here, you know, a piece of Skittles or something like that. I think it's just easier for our children to be able to use versus an iPad. That's not to say you shouldn't have that iPad because you're going to need it.
Sure. You know, here's a good question, though. With the world of reinforcers, there seems like there's so many categories that you have to try and in your mind as a parent, and even as a teacher or someone that's working as an ABA therapist, trying to find the fine lines is difficult. It almost seems like you have, you know, you need to break it down into like food, you need to break it down into bathroom, you need to break it down into homework. You know, there's a reinforcer for each item that you're going to go through, but sometimes you can't double up reinforcers. You can't give an Oreo cookie because you went to the bathroom and give an Oreo cookie because you ate your lunch. It's starting to get confusing.
That's a good point. And that's why you have to look at all the different types of reinforcers, from the natural reinforcer to the social reinforcer to the tangible reinforcer to the activity reinforcer. And reinforcers should be given depending on the actual action of the child. And this is why differential reinforcement is so important. For greater amount of response, the child gets greater amount of reinforcer. Meaning, like, if a child never speaks and today he goes, "Mom," Oh my goodness. The reinforcer should be so much more than the day that he was just signing or just doing an approximation of mom, right? Because the children need to understand, oh, that is the action I need to do. And we as the professionals and the parents have to be able to teach our kids how to differentiate between when they're going to get those grand reinforcers. And that's why it's so important not to just give the grand reinforcers all the time. One of the biggest fights I have with parents that should know better at SFAX and parents that I see in the supermarket or you know, you want to go and like scold them. If I say to you, you know, Johnny had a tough day today, Johnny bit his classmates, right? You can't be handing Johnny that bag of fries that you hand him every day for the days that he has good days, because you would have just confused Johnny.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So it's so important that, you know, our students understand that there's limitation and there, I'm going into discipline now, and that there's consequences for your action. You know, you're not going to be reinforced but just because, you know, I love you and I see you and I'm just going to give you a bag of chips. No, you actually have to earn it, because when it's time to earn it and when it gets really difficult, it's difficult for our student. So there's all kinds of things that is found in the classroom and in the home that could be used for reinforcer. I don't feel like you need to create a reinforcer. I think you need to look at your environment and see what is in your environment that you can use as a reinforcer, because when you're on those long trips to Disney,
yeah,
and that iPad is dead, yeah, and there's no way to charge that iPad, you got to get creative and think, okay, what else can I give little Johnny for him to be okay?
And melatonin doesn't count.
And melatonin doesn't count. You know, it really doesn't. So it's really important that as individual and as caregivers that we have a treasure box. You know, the treasure box is like our tool, our little secret little tool that we can go into at any given moment and pick something out. That's why it's so important not to only have one reinforcer. You want to have as many as you possibly can. Individual with autism sometimes have unusual interests, and you have to be able to think outside the box too. If that is what's reinforcing for the child and it's not going to bring harm to them, what's so bad about it?
Yeah, there's nothing really wrong. I mean, you know, I've seen several, you know, let's just say boy child with children with autism that are boys have girl dolls. Mm-hmm. In the modern world, we can say this, in the modern world, that would be looked at as, oh, that's not how you play properly with toys. But in an autistic world, in a world that we live in, it's not the same. They're not looking at that doll as it's a girl doll or a boy doll. They're looking at it as it's a toy that I'm enjoying because it brings me some type of comfort. So you do. You have to break your norms and think about, what are they playing with? Is it appropriate? Mm-hmm. As a matter of, like, is it safe for them? That's what's more important. Is it safe? If it's not safe, that's one that you want to, you know, try to pull away. You mentioned discipline. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of parents have a hard time with this one. And I think, Dr. Moody, you know, in many of the different conversations you've had in the past and in the presentations you've done in the past, that's often been one of the biggest challenges for parents with autism is, how do you discipline a child with autism? You know, there's ways to do it using reinforcers, but I have discovered, many of parents have discovered, that there's also a negative reinforcement that you didn't expect. For example, mm-hmm. the child misbehaves, you snap like a normal parent would, mm-hmm. and say, that was wrong. And now all of a sudden, your child likes the negative behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you break that?
I mean, I always believe that there needs to be rules for everything, right? In my house with my three kids, there's rules. If you do this, you get this. If you do this, this is taken away. That's what negative reinforcement is. It's a method that you can use to help specific behavior. With negative reinforcement, sometimes it's uncomfortable and it's unpleasant in taking away something from a child, but they need to know that there's consequences for their action. You're not always gonna get the things that you want. And if you break that remote to the TV, then how am I going to turn the TV on? You would have just lost the TV privilege because you break it, right? And that's what negative reinforcement is. Positive is giving something and negative is taking it away. And there's nothing wrong with that, because in life, our kids need to know this. You know, you can't go around taking your sibling's toy and breaking it, and then I'm going to replace it, because then you're building up a relationship with siblings that could work against you later on. So for me, it's so important that, you know, there's consequences, right? In the topic of reinforcement, there's so much that could come out of it. As in, if a sibling breaks your toy, right? And the brother just keeps on, the child with autism keep on breaking their sibling's toy. You cannot, under no circumstances, should you be buying that toy and putting it in the way that the child with autism can break it again, because then you're just reinforcing that negative behavior, and then that's when you now have a problem. It's really important that our kids know there's consequences, and that's where the removal of the reinforcer comes in. Negative reinforcement over time, the target behavior should increase with the explanation that the unpleasant thing will be taken away, meaning like if you keep on breaking the remote to the TV, you're not going to get to watch the TV. And the remote is going to be taken away.
And I think a lot of people during the pandemic experienced this. I mean, how many iPad replacements were made, you know? I mean, because kids got, you know, fully upset and started throwing the iPads. That's one of those situations where, you know, it's hard to take away the iPad because you still need it. You need it for school. And as soon as you get it back and fixed so that they can use it for school or for just a few minutes during a break, there it goes, flying across the room again.
Well, you just made a point, and I probably should have said this earlier. The thing with iPad is that there has to be ownership, right? If your neurotypical child breaks their phone, you're not going to hurry and go and fix the phone right away.
Right.
So the thing about with the iPad is that if you're going to use the iPad for working, during the pandemic, there should have been like 3 iPads. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but the whole point is the iPad for communication, the iPad for reinforcement, and the iPad to work with. And with our children, that's kind of how it has to be. Because if you want them to communicate and play with the same iPad, it's their voice. So you're basically telling them, oh, if I had a choice between using my iPad to speak and going on YouTube, what do you think I'm going to do?
Of course, YouTube.
So a child may not break the iPad that's the reinforcement as quickly as they'll break the iPad that is their voice or that is their school. So that's why it's so important. And doing so, that's a whole knowledge training altogether, that the iPad should probably be in different cases so that the child could be able to differentiate between them. They should be responsible for the iPad, meaning like if you don't plug the iPad in, because everyone should be able to do that, even if you have to prompt them through it, and the iPad is dead, then you don't have an iPad.
Right.
You know, it's your responsibility to brush your teeth, else you're going to have rotten teeth. You're going to have cavity. It's going to hurt. You know, it goes back into how do you treat your child with autism? Like, what kind of child do you want to have right off the bat, the minute you find out that your child is diagnosed? You know, what are the rules that you're going to have in your home? And I think sometimes we our kids don't want us to feel sorry for them. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we're going to not be here one day. And the child that we have in the household, if we don't let them know that there's consequences and they do something, they get something, and that if they break something, they lose something, what's going to happen is that our kids are not going to have the people that you think is going to take care of them. They're not going to be there to take care of them. And that's why it's so important that you know how to identify reinforcers.
I was going to say, you know, it's interesting how much they observe. So when you think about the reinforcers, either be positive or negative, a child with autism seems to really, really pay attention to your direct moves and how it relates to that object. When, you know, a neurotypical child, you say, that was bad, don't do that again, they might either listen to you or they might smirk at you and say, I'm going to do it again. Mm-hmm. But the child with autism does a step further. If they want to do it again, they do it again. And then they look at you and say, that was bad, don't do it again. As if almost repeating exactly what you said to them, but they don't know or understand that they did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's a difficult thing to deal with.
Well, you know, I don't know if I necessarily agree with you. I do believe that a lot of our kids, not all of our kids, a lot of our kids understand their action. Remember, their action is reinforced. So if you're that parent who, say, Johnny wants attention, and he knows the way he gets attention is to break the remote. When Johnny breaks the remote, what is the parent going to do? They're going to go over and they're going to scold Johnny. Guess what Johnny just got? He just got reinforced because now he's getting mm-hmm. the attention. So for our kids, negative or positive reinforcement, it's still attention. I'm still getting attention. So we just need to understand. We sometimes as parents, we have to stop. We have to look. And we have to give our kids the benefit of the doubt. And we have to not say, well, they have autism, they don't understand. No, we need to be thinking, they have autism and then they understand. And then you work backward from there. It's really, 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 really important that we never think they don't know. Because I believe that they do know more than we give them credit for. Some of the smartest kids I know are in our school. The things that they can think about or the things that they... And they may not have the words to express it, but you just have to watch the behaviors.
Yeah, it's amazing what they can pull off. They can do a lot of things.
And they know their audience. They know who they can and cannot do certain things with. You know, why when I walk into a classroom, everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. You know,
very important.
It's very important. Well, how do they know who I am if I'm not working with them every day? You know, but you also need to also build that relationship. And we call that parent in my world. This is when I establish myself as a reinforcer. I'm not going into the classroom only for discipline and only for a behavior plan. I am saying hi, I'm giving hugs, I'm giving kisses, I'm giving tickles. I'm like, hi Anthony, how are you doing today? I'm making sure that he knows that I'm okay. I am not just coming around when it's, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. Or when I'm putting him on extinction, or when I'm removing a reinforcer because, you know, you just did an inappropriate behavior. You also need to be reinforcing when they're doing. You shouldn't be just be, don't run.
Yes.
All the time. When he's walking, you should be, oh, I love the way you're walking so nicely. Good for you. You know, you need to be able to, you have to reinforce when there's good behavior. You can't just, you know, discipline when there's inappropriate behavior. That's just a no-no.
I think as a parent, you typically forget that, though.
Yeah, but you can't. You know, in our world, we have to work. I feel like a parent with a child with autism have to work twice as much as a parent with a neurotypical child, just because you're building this world for your child that they're going to have to live in. And not everyone is going to look at our children as in, oh, poor little Johnny. After a while, Johnny's not cute anymore.
Right.
You know, and no one wants to have that conversation. And it's not a conversation for reinforcement, but it's a conversation that needs to be had. So that's an upcoming topic that we just discovered. You know, how does discipline work for our kids? You know, when is it that we're supposed to discipline our children? But I think one of the most important thing is knowing how to identify a reinforcer, that you have a variety of different reinforcer for your children, that they're not just focused on just one reinforcement. So since reinforcement should be used to, it needs to be unique to your child. It needs to be unique to that student. Direct observation is the most effective way to identify potential reinforcement. One of the things that I've done over the years with our students is that we'll take them to the doll store.
Really now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The American Girl doll store?
No, dollar store.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said the doll store.
No, not the doll store.
We might not be able to afford that much longer.
That is the Jamaican accent right there. I apologize. No, the dollar store. You take her kids to the doll store and you observe them. You look at the aisle that they're going down. You look at what they're looking at. Take them to Target, right in the front where Target has those little inexpensive toys. See what it is that they go towards. What is it that interests them? And you may be surprised the things that our kids will go towards that you may think, oh, I never thought that he loved Play-Doh. I didn't know that he liked coloring book. Oh, wow, it's so weird. He just wants to play with that plastic bag. Mm-hmm. If he wants to play with that plastic bag, how is that a bad thing? You know
That's
what
right.
I mean?
That's right.
That is what's reinforcing. Now, what it is, what's super important is that you now figure out how is that plastic bag, how can you make that plastic bag be more appropriate? Maybe you teach that little girl how to make pom-poms out of that plastic bag, or you teach the little boy how to make a toy out of that plastic bag, or maybe you teach him how to go to Publix with you, and now he's the one that's helping you put the groceries in a plastic bag. There's just so much you could do with a toy that you may consider not appropriate, right?
Right.
So when selecting a potential reinforcement, it's important to first consider things that are age appropriate and natural to the situation. The best reinforcement is the least artificial activity or items that will still work to increase the behavior. So for example, if little Johnny is jumping on a trampoline, right? Or is drawing a picture, both reinforcement for a child, drawing may be more appropriate reinforcement for completing a handwriting task, while jumping on the trampoline may be reinforcement for a very, very hard task that the child is just so caught up with that you just need them to have a break. Because they're stimming and jumping on the trampoline is kind of like mellow them down a little bit. So the reinforcer should be so close to the actual action that it's going to help the child, you know, mellow down or be reinforced or be more happy, or and also help you to be able to do more work with the child. So why is drawing appropriate for when they were just doing a writing task? The items are there already.
Right.
The items are there. You have to be prepared when you're working with our kids. You can't, I say this to my staff all the time and they look at me like I'm crazy. You can't say, Johnny, touch your nose and where's your head and stomp your feet. And then it's time to reinforce the little Johnny. And then you're opening up a bag of Cheetos to take the Cheeto out to go give him the reinforcer. No, that Cheeto should already be ready to give it to him. Because in the minute that you take to open that bag to get that Cheeto, Johnny slapped you.
Right.
Or he picked his nose. So what you're reinforcing is the fact that he picked his nose, or you're not going to reinforce him because he just hit you. Then that was a wasted moment.
Yeah, and all that hard work you just put in there goes nowhere.
All that hard work just... So that's why it's so important to have so many different reinforcers. Because if little Johnny went to the potty for the first time and that iPad is dead...
You're out of luck on that one.
So it needs to be so close. You need to be prepared. And that's why I say for us, it's like we're working more. But it's okay. Because a long term... is that little Johnny's not going to need that iPad. He's not going to need that Skittles. He's not going to need that Cheeto. The fact that he did what he was supposed to do and you're happy and he's happy, he just accomplished something that he never thought he would be able to do. So just a smile would suffice, right? And that's what we should all be working towards.
Well, you know, you mentioned how, you know, reinforcers are used across the board. I mean, not just with children with autism.
Yes.
But think about this. I mean, this is a simple form of reinforcement that is wildly accepted for children and for even adults to give blood. What do they offer you? A cookie.
Yeah.
It might seem like that's nothing, but it really, there's a lot of children that love going to give the opportunity to give blood, and they get a cookie for doing so. So they were rewarded for what they did. That's no different than what we do with the children we have.
But think about it. What do you do? What every time I pass a Target by my house, they're giving out gift cards if you go and give blood.
Right.
That's a reinforcer.
Yeah.
There is some people who will just go and give blood just because they're going to get that gift card. Last season, flu season, if you went to Target to get your flu shot, they gave you $5 off your next purchase. You know, those are ways companies are doing and they're reinforcing you. And the likelihood of I going back to Target to get that $5 discount is probably better than going to like another place that I'm not going to get anything, right?
Exactly.
So it's extremely important that you don't look at the reinforcer as, oh my goodness, it's just for children with autism. No, it's for everyone. And it's also important that we fade it. What does that mean? So it's not realistic to always get the iPad every time you go pee-pee in the potty. It really isn't. It's not realistic for every single time you do something, you get something. If that was the case, no one would be working. Because every time I come to work early, I would love to be able to get a bonus. I don't.
Right.
So fading is when you remove the removal of the prompt, the removal of the reinforcer to something least restricted. So ultimately, we want our children to respond without the addition of artificial reinforcement. Once a child is responding reliable, it is important that to thin the use of the motivator to establish more natural occurrence and consequences as a reinforcer. What does that mean? A high five, you know, a smile, you know, a little tap on the shoulder, the more social praises versus the tangible and the activity praises, the edible. So if you're in a school, especially during COVID right now, in us, you know, working with our kids, it's really difficult to do edible reinforcers.
Right.
It's really difficult to do tangible reinforcers because we don't want to spread, right? So we need to be focusing more on the more social reinforcers, because it's, you could give a high five in air, you don't need to be touching the person to give them a high five, right? So it's really important that we look at that, and it's important that our kids also understand that there's different types of reinforcement.
Right. And celebration, you know, congratulation, in a certain way, it can go further than a food tangible or a hand tangible toy, because you're getting that affection that you're looking for at the same time being praised for what you're working on.
One of the things that I feel strongly about is that you be very cautious when you are working with children and you're working with reinforcement. There's four that I always tell parents they need to be very aware of. Reinforcement should be planned and not introduced as a bribe when a child refuses to do something. You can't say, well, if you do this, you get this. Because what if you don't have it to give all the time? It's really important that you plan ahead. You know you're going to have a difficult day because you're going to the dentist. Plan ahead. Use a social story, you know? If you're going to go to Publix, plan ahead. You know, you can't just put your child in a situation and expect that you're going to bribe your way out of it. It will backfire on you. So bribing is a no-no for children with autism. Positive reinforcement should not be offered to a child to entice them to stop engaging in challenging behavior.
That's a rough one.
Yeah, and I'm going to say it again. Positive reinforcement should not be offered to a child to entice him to stop engaging in a challenging behavior. I'm going to give you a hug, Johnny, if you stop punching me.
I think I've seen more therapists use blocking techniques and stuff.
Blocking and redirecting. And then after they stop for a little bit, then you can, because you want to have a break. You want to have a break between the negative behavior and the positive reinforcement. It shouldn't be close. Even if it's just as simple as give the child a task when he's done with the behavior, that's quick, something that he knows how to do. Johnny knows how to touch his nose, right? So if Johnny was just headbutting you and then now you block and he stopped, Johnny, can you touch your nose? Good job touching your nose. And then you give him the hug. But it shouldn't be, Johnny, if you stop, mommy will give you a hug. That's a no-no. Reinforcer given to a child should not be large enough to increase the behavior, but small and practical. For example, if a child works for a praise, a pat on the back, then it's not necessary to use a cookie. So if the child works a pat on the back, why are you bringing out a cookie?
Yeah, there's no need to double up.
There's no need to double up. And please do not ask him to spell cookie. You know, it's when a parent uses... Johnny does something. Oh, and you want a cookie. Here's a cookie, but you have to spell cookie. Well, no, Johnny just touched his nose. And that's what you asked for. So asking him now to spell cookie.
Two different things.
He's just going to punch you in the face.
Yeah, you just did two different things. And you're pushing him too far.
You're pushing him too far. And with children with autism, you got to know how to pick your battle. Do not promise or offer reinforcers that you cannot do or do not intend to deliver.
That's pretty serious.
Our kids have the best memory.
They certainly do. They remember everything. And when you think they don't, they do.
And autism doesn't stop them from understanding trust. You know, I love to tell my family sometimes, I'm like, listen, our kids are absolutely the smartest human being I know. Super smart. And if they feel like they can't trust you, they're not going to work for you. And if you keep on making promises and then don't follow through with the promises, it will hurt you in the long run. And you also need to think about the siblings. Do not say to little Johnny, if you don't behave yourself, we're not going to go to Disney this weekend.
That's not a good idea.
Because if Susie lives in the household and she's his sister and she has all these plans to go to Disney and you don't follow through because Johnny broke, I don't know, the computer, what do you do then? So I just believe, in summary, it's the identification and use of reinforcement procedure to facilitate skills acquisition in the classroom requires time and careful consideration. I believe using reinforcement to help improve a behavior, it requires skills and time and careful consideration. It's important to remember that any reinforcer is only as good as the outcome it's accomplishing. It's important. If the reinforcer hasn't changed the behavior, it's not working.
And you got to start over.
And it's okay to start over. This is why I keep on telling my parents, baby step.
The turtle and the hare story is always so prevalent in autism, because everyone thinks it's a race, but it's not. It's the marathon. You got to take it slow and piece by piece.
Yeah, and a reinforcer is, and I just want to say it again in another way, right? A reinforcer is only effective if the student target behavior increases or is being maintained after skills acquisition. Reinforcement must be individualized for each student. A teacher should have a variety of different reinforcement available. Within the household, parents should have several reinforcement, that treasure box that I talked to. In addition, the requirement for gaining access to this reinforcement should increase over time. You start off by getting immediate reinforcement, and after a while, it should gradually increase to the point that the child can wait until the weekend to get that movie he wants to watch. So it may start off as immediate, then after every two tasks, then after 10 minutes, then after every period, then at the end of the school day. You know what I mean? Because if you're not doing that, the child expects to get reinforced every single action. You're building up yourself for failure. You're building up the child for failure.
Something that you can never keep up with. But yeah. Think how many reinforcers you're already working with, and then you're going to have that every single time for the rest of your life.
Yeah. You just it's just very, very, very important that, you know, parents understand that. And you need to understand reinforcement, desire of object or toy, verbal praise, specific treats like sweets, favorite toys. Free time could also be used as a reinforcement. Specifically, activity as going to the park, to the beach, etc. Every child has their preference. And you have to make sure that it's individualized. You know, I love to tell parents all the time, Dr. Moody, what's your reinforcement? Red wine. Another person is travel. Another person is their spouse bringing them flowers.
Makes sense.
Another person is just getting free time to themselves. You know, you bring me a bottle of red wine and I'm in heaven. Like, I am like I'm good. Right? So positive reinforcement is most effective when you have chosen the desired behavior you want your child to display. Instead of focusing on the negative, you focus on the positive, right? You know which reinforcement you want to use and work for to reinforce your child's effort to display positive behavior, even if it isn't exactly perfect. Reinforce them for the little that they do, and gradually increase that reinforcement and use differential reinforcement for greater amount of response. For me, if you follow these guidelines, you'll find that you're yourself feeling more equipped to reinforce positive reinforcement while redirecting negative or undesired behavior. Being mindful about the factors and purpose that influence your child behavior and improve that outcome at home, you know, it will make your life better. It'll make their life better. No child wants to always be upset.
No.
You know what I mean? No parent wants to always feel frustrated. So yes, you're going to have to put a little bit of work in to identify the reinforcement. You're going to have to put a lot of work in by immediately reinforcing them after a while. You're going to have to put the work in by gradually fading the reinforcer. And you're going to have to put the work in by thinking outside the box and maybe making those trips to the dollar store to find what your child desire. And yes, you're going to have to, you know, do some tough love sometimes with the reinforcer, and you're going to feel hurt when he breaks that expensive piece of equipment that you have that you use as a reinforcer. But don't cry in front of your child. Don't let them see that it's getting to you, because if they are having the behavior for attention, you would have just reinforced it by reacting in a negative way.
I'm to blame for that one. I've been there, so I know exactly what that's like.
No, it's difficult. It's really difficult, even with parents with neurotypical kids at home. You want to scream bloody hell because, you know, they just crashed the car in a fence, right? Or they just did something that they're not, you know, that you know better. You know, but it's just one of those things. You can't react to because then you just reinforce the inappropriate behavior.
And for the parents that are members of the school and know us and know folks like me who might have my two kids here in the school, I remember that very clearly. There was one incident where Dominic, my oldest son, did something wrong, and I just out of instinct turned around and said, "How dare you? Why did you do that?" And ever since then, I now get it. Every time we come to that section of the house, he'll turn to me and go, "How dare you?" And I know that that was not reinforced properly. Yeah. So now I have to work even harder to erase
that. To undo. But you can turn that, and we'll do a one-on-one on that. You could turn that behavior.
I'll be bringing some red wine for that one-on-one.
we could clear that up fairly quickly. It's just really important that, you know, we stay focused and we understand that it's work, right?
Right.
It's work being a parent. There's no real book on teaching us how to be a parent for a neurotypical child, much less a child with autism. People write books, people say they're expert, people whatever, but every single student in this school is so different. There's no two ducks alike. Our kids are like snowflakes. There's no two that's alike, you know, and it's really important that when working with our kids, we are aware of that, and we're cognizant to the fact that, you know, he's smarter than me, so I need to figure out how am I gonna outsmart, you know, little Johnny.
Right.
So yeah, that's me on reinforcement, folks, and there's just so much more we could talk about it, but it's really important that you take the little that I was able to share with you and you think about your child and your situation and how reinforcement can help you. And I know that some people are saying, "Oh, but I don't want to give my son candy." Again, there is tangible, you know, there is activity, there's social, there's sensory. Yes, edibles seem to work stronger for a lot of kids, but even if you have to use an edible, you can fade that after a time.
That makes a lot of sense. Dr. Moody, I'm sure a lot of folks may have additional questions after this podcast is over. How can they reach you if they want to get more details about types of tangibles or types of reinforcers that they should be doing or should not be doing?
info@sfacs.org. If you send an email there, I will quickly try to return an answer as quickly as possible. And also, I don't know if it's posted yet, but it should be posted soon. My trainings are open to the public, and I am going to be doing them on Zoom, and it should be on our website at www.sfacs.org. I do about 6 trainings a month via Zoom, and the public is welcome from all over the world, all over the U.S. Feel free to join. You will get to meet other parents in our school. You will get some FaceTime with me. And those are, I love doing those trainings, and you will see where I'm bringing in professionals to speak about their topics as well. This year, my focus is a focus on the family and the health and mental illness. So you're going to see me always encouraging the parents to take care of them and build in their village. And I'm excited about this year. I have so much new things I want to share, so much more materials that I have been working on. So yes, visit our website at www.sfacs.org or shoot me an email at info@sfacs.org, or you could follow us on Facebook and Instagram and our YouTube channel, and you get to see all the good things that we're doing here at SFACs. I am like all smiles when I'm talking about the school and talking about my children here. So you'll get to see the smile and how I just love my job and I love what I do, and I'm so happy and I feel so good that I'm able to share this with the community, and I hope that I can help more.
I think that really comes through on even the microphone here. You can hear it in the speakers of how happy you are. So we thank you for all that you do, and thanks for another edition of the Autism 411 podcast. Of course, you can find it, like she said, at the website sfacs.org or on our social media channels. John Roker here with Dr. Tamara Moody. Thank you again for tuning in for another edition of this podcast from South Florida Autism Charter School. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you, John.
This has been the Autism 411 podcast with Dr. Tamara Moody from the South Florida Autism Charter School. To learn more, visit sfacs.org.